Are you ready for homeschooling to feel joyful again? Do you long for support as you learn alongside your kids? Welcome to Homeschool Better Together, a podcast about building a homeschool experience that works for your family. I'm Pam Barnhill, and it's time to step out of the overwhelm and into the wonder. Let's do this.
So glad that you are joining us today for our next episode of the Homeschool Better Together podcast. I don't know about you guys, but my kids sometimes have behavioral issues. I mean, not gonna lie, as a homeschool mom, our homeschool is not always a pretty place. We have tears, we have attitudes. And guess what? They don't always just come from me or from my kids. A lot of times they come from me, something I have worked on over the years. But it's a process, and homeschooling has been one of the most sanctifying things that I have ever done in my life. But I have a guest with me today. This is Emily Brown is going to join us, and we are going to talk about like kids' behavior and the negative thought patterns that we can get stuck in whenever our kids are not behaving the way that we would like them to, or they're just not behaving in an ideal way. So Emily is a longtime lover and follower of Homeschool Better Together. She is a homeschool mom of seven, and she's also a life coach for homeschool moms. She loves to support and encourage moms and help them love homeschooling. So welcome, Emily. I'm so glad you've joined us today.
Thank you so much, Lainey, for having me. I am so excited to be on the podcast with you.
Well, I am delighted that you have joined us, and I'm excited to dive into this conversation. Emily and I haven't had a lot of personal interaction, but I'm going to just go out on a limb and assume that maybe you have some also similar experience with children who don't behave 100% of the time, or maybe, you know, aren't meeting the expectations that we set for them. So I felt like this would be a great conversation to have, because I feel like I'm not alone in the struggle of the day-to-day life of the homeschool mom.
Oh, you are not alone, my friend. Yeah, I have, like you said, I have seven kids, and we actually started homeschooling when our surprise number seven was born. And so we had actually had our kids in school. We had done private school, public school. We had tried a whole bunch of different things. And ultimately, we were really called home to just really focus on actually our relationships. That was what we really wanted to focus on as homeschoolers. And so, but when we did that, we pulled five kids out of school all at once.
Oh,
and brought them all home in December at Christmas, and didn't send them back after Christmas break, and immediately started homeschooling. And suddenly I was just faced with like all the behavior things all at once from all of these children. I had a toddler who was with me all the time. And then I had this brand new newborn, and then five older kids who were used to being at school and behaving a certain way for their teacher. But then we were getting a very different version of that at home. So we did want to be like the primary influence in our children's lives. That was such a like an inherent, like a deep internal desire that we had. But now I was faced with like, oh, this is the reality. Actually needing to like parent them all the time, and really kind of struggling with like, when do I put the parent hat on and the teacher hat, or the guidance counselor hat, or the principal hat, or the cafeteria lady hat, or, you know, bus driver hat.
It's hard to juggle all the things. And I think for me personally, so again, I hate to speak broadly for everybody, but I do think these are some universal experiences. In speaking with other homeschool moms over the years, what would you say is one of the biggest misunderstandings parents have about their kids' behavior?
Ooh, this is such a good question. Okay, so let me just start off by saying, like, I had my first six kids in 8 years, and the first three were boys. Okay, so we had five boys and two girls, but we had three boys within 3 years. And so we just had so much like boyness around, which is so much fun, by the way. I love boys. I'm not saying anything bad about boys at all. They're some of the greatest humans that are now like adults now in my home. And the thing that I have seen in myself and learned how to shift in myself, but also I'm seeing across the board with parents, is that we really assume the worst about our children's intentions. That when we are observing or encountering a child's like unwanted behavior, something that we would prefer they didn't do, it's very easy for moms, especially who are with their people all day long, to kind of assume the worst, like assuming the worst in, about their intention, that they're intentionally disobeying, they're intentionally getting distracted, they're intentionally poking each other or not doing their chore or what, you know, whatever it is, that the, really the misunderstanding that I'm seeing is not looking for the best in their children, in all honesty, and really kind of leading with the assumption of like, hey, like you're doing this to hurt me. And that's really painful.
Well, and I think, okay, so that last statement you just said, I think is the, when you're talking about people not looking for the best, like they're not looking for the best intentions in their kids. And they're kind of assuming that they don't have the best intentions. In my world, I have kind of often interpreted their behavior as a personal attack against me.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, when you said it's like, you're doing this on purpose. It's not that I have really framed it in my mind the way you just put it about how I'm not giving them kind of the benefit of the doubt. I'm not assuming that their intentions are, you know, are not malfeasant, but but I take things so personally. You know, when a child is having a hard day and they're crying over their math, like, does it, I think for me, sometimes it's like, well, I'm frustrated because am I a bad math teacher or am I, like, I internalize their behaviors and kind of blame myself. Mm-hmm. Or it's just that it feels personal. It feels like a personal attack on me. It's like, well, you didn't do your chore because, you know, X, Y, or Z, but I take it personally because then I like, it's real easy as a mom to move into martyr syndrome. Oh my gosh, I have to do everything for you. And yes. I don't know. I think that sometimes it's really hard to move ourselves out of like those kind of thought patterns. And when our kids are struggling with behavior, something, one time, I don't remember who I heard this from, to be honest, but somewhere along the way, somebody told me that all behavior is communication. Mm-hmm. And I really latched on to that because then I started trying hard to stop internalizing all of the negative behaviors and acting like I was being so put out by them and trying to like look deeper into my kiddo to figure out like, what are they trying to communicate? Like,
yes.
And that was a real game changer for me. But what that was certainly for me, like a big kind of thought process shift in how I was interpreting my kids' negative behaviors. But what are some of the most common like negative thoughts that you see in parents or like kind of those loops that we get stuck in? Like I said, for me, it was definitely that I was taking everything so personally. And then the thing that helped me shift out of that was thinking like, okay, this behavior is actually communication. And so what are they trying to communicate? And they just don't, maybe they don't have the skills to communicate it appropriately. So that was a huge shift for me. So what are some of those kind of similar, like, I guess, thought loops that you see that parents kind of get stuck in and then maybe like, I don't know, a resolution or solution, maybe a different way to think about it so they can move out of that kind of thought pattern?
Yeah, no, it's such a, and I love that you like that you pointed this out because what we are observing, their behavior that we're observing isn't all of it. Like there is a story going on behind the behavior. Like you were saying, they're trying to communicate something, but their brains, their prefrontal cortex in their brain will not be fully developed until they are 25 years old. And so we are engaging with their, you know, 7-year-old brain and expecting it to work as like a 30-year-old. And it's just not,
right.
It's just not logical. Like that's like such a big miscommunication we have in our own brains is like really the expectation that they act differently is where we kind of get stuck. But to answer your question, those common like really negative thought loops we get stuck in is there's a lot of shoulds and have tos. And it sounds a lot like they shouldn't be doing that. They should know better by now. I should have taught them better by now. It's my fault. They learned that from me. If I had done this better in the past, we wouldn't be dealing with this right now. And that's where a lot of that like consistency and, you know, we kind of beat ourselves up for past decisions that we've made because, oh, we've really prioritized this and this and this, and we should have been prioritizing that. And then that kind of rips apart your self-trust and, you know, impedes your future decision-making about, you know, what you want to do in your homeschool. Like it really just has like these really deep roots that I don't think most moms understand how widespread those roots can go. And really, it comes down to this belief that, like, I can't handle this. I can't handle, I'm not enough. I call it the litany of not enough. We just have this litany of, like, I'm not enough at, like, I'm not a good enough homeschooler. I'm not a good enough mom. I'm not a good enough, I'm not patient enough. I'm not organized enough. I'm not fun enough. If, you know, they, and it's, it kind of comes down to this, like, litany of not enough that we just believe I can't handle whatever is going on because I'm lacking in something. It's very, we have a scarcity about our motherhood, and it's really makes everything else we're trying to do in our home, especially in our homeschooling, feel very painful because it feels like, you know, what I see is like a lot of moms, every single mom I know intellectually knows how blessed they are, but it can be really hard to feel blessed in these moments of, you know, a kid's meltdown, or it can feel like, really, if we were like to put like really like an onion, like peel back the layers, right? It's really, it almost feels like your worth is on the line when their behavior is not performing at the way that you think it should be. Because if you had done, like, this is how I hear it in my own brain, and this is how I hear it from, you know, every mom I talk to, really, is that if I was better at this, then they wouldn't be suffering. They won't suffer in the future. And I wouldn't, you know, feel so bad right now. So there's just a lot of shoulds. There's a lot of have tos. There's just a lot of like ruminating about the past and worrying about the future. And it really just kind of robs you of your present moment, which is the moment that you have with this kid here and now to kind of peel back what's going on for them. But, you know, also being willing to take the time to do that, because part of that litany of not enough is like, I don't have time to deal with this. Yes. And that comes up a lot because we have so much to do. Right.
The time issue is a separate discussion. I'm thinking about like what you were talking about not being enough and how moms really kind of latch on to that thought pattern. I think I totally see that. One of the things in talking to homeschool moms that I find is like one of their biggest fears is that they're going to fail their children.
Yeah.
They think that they're not going to be successful in this homeschooling thing. They're really worried about the outcome of the future that they can't see. Mm-hmm. And that idea really has me kind of pondering and like thinking about, you know, that idea that maybe it does stem from that I'm not enough thought pattern. Mm-hmm. And it was a few years ago, I was having a conversation with Lena Sutherland from Sibling Relationship Labs. And she was talking about our finiteness. And it really resonated with me because I think that there is always this sense of not being enough for something or not having the capacity to do something, but that idea of the fact that we're finite, we're really not enough, but that yeah. I know that Jesus is enough. Like I can lean into my faith and recognize that, you know, God has an infinite capacity, but I am finite. And that really was, I never considered the fact that my striving to be enough in all circumstances for all people at all times was me striving to be like God in an infinite capacity, as opposed to recognizing my finite capacity and having to trust and rest in his infiniteness that he has and be able to order things in my life accordingly. And that was such, again, it was such a turning point for the way that I was viewing my role as a homeschool mom and just getting it all done, right? And that I'm not enough. And then that does bring into that piece of like, well, my kids aren't behaving the way they are because or they're not behaving the way that I would like them to because I'm not doing all of these things. I'm not being consistent enough. I'm not, you know, it's such a huge lie that parents, I think, especially homeschool moms, tell themselves. So that kind of brings me to another question. And that is like, what is it about homeschooling? Because I did, like I said, you know, just it, especially for homeschool moms, I think these are real like struggle points. And what is it about homeschooling that really is going to intensify not only those negative thought patterns that mom has, but also just the intensity of the behavioral issues that we see with our kids.
Yeah. So when we are with our people all day long and we don't get a break, then you're just right. seeing every single thing. It's kind of like, so like my husband is an English professor. And so, you know, when he's during the school year, when he's at work and we just kind of see him in, you know, sporadically throughout the week and like in the evenings and on the weekends and stuff, like when you see somebody, you know, not frequently, right? Like all their little like idiosyncrasies and like all their little like things that they do like are easy to kind of brush off when you're with someone all day long. Like when he would come home during the summer, within about a month, I'm just like, like, you know, are you going to load the dishwasher this way anytime soon? You know, like we would really like them to start doing things a little differently. And we're just with our people all day long, 24/7. This is not a 9 to 5 or 9 to 3 or Monday through Friday lifestyle we are saying yes to. This is like we have taken on every role. We have chosen to be our children's primary influence. I truly believe that the only reason to homeschool is because God's calling you to it. And so if you're saying yes to that, it is because, you know, you are saying yes to a call to be your child's primary influence and to raise them in the unique way that is appropriate for your family. And so it intensifies the behavioral issues that you see because you are just seeing them all the time and you're really not getting a break from seeing that. And you're seeing, you know, our children are, you know, a beautiful amalgam of how God created them, you know, as his beloved child, and then also like how we've raised them. And God picked these particular children out for each particular parent, and he puts, you know, every single parent out for these children. And so there's no mistake here, but a lot of times we blame ourselves for the misbehavior. We blame ourselves for, you know, the things that they're not doing the way we would prefer to, or they're mirroring back some of the behavior that we've been showing them. And then we go beat ourselves up for that. And it really does. Like, we can't blame teachers. We can't blame the other kids at school for the behaviors our kids do when they're in our home all the time.
Right. Well, okay. So you were talking about, you know, we can beat ourselves up whenever our children mirror back, maybe mm-hmm. not so lovely behaviors that we have, you know, that we have had.
Yep.
I'm like, oh gosh, it's,
yep.
That's snapping. Really humbling to see it. Like when you recognize that they learned that from me, oh no. But I think, so kind of going back to the thought patterns that parents have and just how we get stuck in these negative thought patterns. And by the way, I do want this episode to definitely, like, we're going to talk about how to, like, move out of these thought patterns.
Yeah.
And like, we're not just, everything sounds so doom and gloom right now. Our children misbehave. We think all these terrible things. But really, there's lots of hope. I really want to communicate that these are, number one, really common things for homeschool moms. I know there are things that I have experienced, but I know I'm not alone in that. And so I thought this was really a conversation worth having. But in the same way that sometimes we see like specific actions that are very visible, that are mirrored back to us, we are just kind of hit deeply with, yeah, I know where they learned that from. How would you say that the negative thoughts that we were talking about that we can have that are internal, how do those negative thoughts actually influence our kids' behavior?
That's such a great question. Okay. So in cognitive behavioral therapy, you learn that the prefrontal cortex, you have a thought in your brain and it actually sends signals like vibrations down into your body. And that all these different, you know, signals and sensations that happen, we have just labeled one word emotions. And so those one word emotions that fill up your body, okay, those feelings, then actually are the things that fuel the actions that you take. Okay. So you're not feeling angry or overwhelmed because of your kids' actions. They can't actually inject you with a syringe of overwhelm or anger or any of those things. It's physically impossible. Your feelings, your emotions are actually coming from your thoughts. And so when you're having that like litany of not enough swirling around in your brain, you're just fueling over and over and over these negative emotions. And then that's what's driving the snapping or the sarcasm or talking down or being really impatient. And that's all completely within your control. That's not up to anyone else to change for you. That's something that you as the grown-up can handle, that you can do. Those are things you can learn how to do if you don't know how to do them yet. But the way that we, like, we influence our children, and just like they influence us, like just like we think that their behavior, you know, is a certain way. And if, oh, they could just, you know, they could just put their laundry away and get it off the couch, then we could just start morning time on time. And, you know, we wouldn't have to put laundry away and stop and like lose momentum and, you know, throw the whole trajectory of the day off. If, in all honesty, like we believe unintentionally, like we're just misinformed that their behavior is causing that inside of each of us. The same is true for our children. The way that we talk to them, the tones that we use, the, you know, whether we say please and thank you. A lot of parents don't even, you know, we require it of our children, but we forget to be that calm and respectful leader and model that in our home. And so, you know, then we are influencing our children with, you know, probably some, like you mentioned, unlovely behaviors, things that we would prefer not to be doing. It could we, if we had our druthers. And so it just becomes a cycle in the home. And most of the time, we as, you know, as moms, at least this was my belief 100% until I learned how to do this differently, was if you would just .. meaning talking to my kid, at least in my head or actually verbally, if you would just .., then I wouldn't have to yell. If you would just come the first time, I wouldn't have to yell. If you would stop bugging your brother during morning time and taking his stuff or touching his leg or taking his blank, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't have to snap. Then we wouldn't be behind. Then we quit. If we can really learn how to take more ownership and responsibility over what actually we are in control of and separate our emotional state from our children's behavior, we are able to calm down. We're able to be respectful. And when mom changes, when mom goes first, mom sets a different tone in the home, right? When mom sets a tone in the home. So if you're setting the tone of frustration and impatience and anger, first of all, please know that we love you and we are so, like, we understand. I have been there. I'm not saying I do it perfectly. I just catch it faster now and I can shift it in the moment so much faster because I've become so practiced at this. And that's something that moms can learn how to do is to shift the tone in the home to be one of calm, respect, generosity, like all of those virtues that you're wanting to teach your kids. You can do that. But mom really does have to go first because we're the ones who, we're the grownups. We can't expect the kids to go first in order for us to be able to have the freedom and the space to make those changes. And that was really an eye-opener for me. And the way I have a quick story, this is how I proved myself to myself that this was possible. We would be on like a Sunday morning, we'd be getting ready for church, and I would be so frustrated and to the point where I was yelling. We had like all these little kids and nobody's interested in going to church on time. Nobody else cares. they're not dressed. They aren't finding their shoes. We're not loading the car. And so the whole time we finally get in the car, the whole time to church, I'm like seething. I'm so frustrated and getting so angry and just like running.
I have been there.
Okay. Oh, yeah, see, we're not alone. So we're just like, you're kind of like getting yourself so worked up, right? Like that's kind of what I was doing. And then we get to the church. We unload the car and like I'm like trying so hard to calm down, but I'm still internally kind of ranting. And so we get in the door and I see someone like, you know, our priest or like my friends or the nice little church lady who's, you know, welcoming me and saying hi. And suddenly I can smile and I'm patient and I'm calm and I'm respectful and I can look at my children and I can be calm and patient and respectful with them. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm completely capable of doing this with my children.
Yes.
I mean, 5 minutes ago, I wasn't. And I'm like, wait a minute. I actually can control this. This is actually something that I can learn how to do. And so then from that moment, that was when I decided to really make the effort to do that. And then I learned the life coaching tools to be able to do that faster. And so then I can help other parents do that. And it's just one of my favorite things to be able to do because it sets a completely new tone in your home and really opens up the learning environment that we want to be able to set for our children. And that's what's really going to help set them up for their future that we're all worried about ruining.
Yes. Well, it's so funny because your story is reminding me a little bit of, so anybody that has many children and some of them are grown, you've probably experienced your older children either questioning how you parent your younger children, saying, well, it wasn't like you're so different. It wasn't like this when I was a kid. If I would have done that, then. And I always, you know, I always kind of smile and I tell my children, like my adults especially, I'm like, you know what? We can all just praise God that I'm not the same mom today that I was when I became your mom at 21. Like, mm-hmm. I'm growing and learning and hopefully will continue to do so over my whole life. You know, I was like, so yeah, I'm going to be a different mom to my 10-year-old than I was to my 27-year-old when he was 10. And I think because we do have, like, we have in us that ability to learn and grow. And of course, we have like the work of the Holy Spirit in us, but it's exactly what you're talking about. Like when you recognize in a situation where you can like turn on a dime your responses because somebody knocked on your door or like, you know, if even if you're not in public, you answer the telephone and all of a sudden you answer the telephone in a very cheerful voice, even though you were just yelling at everybody in the household, there is that little bit of a trigger there that says, yeah, I can control this and I can learn better skills to do this. And I really like that. So one of the things that I've learned from Misty Winkler, you guys can tell, and this is, I think, just continuing your education as a mom is great. Like every time you're telling me something, I'm like, oh, I learned this from Lena Sutherland. Oh, I learned this from Misty Winkler. She, like one of her mottos is tell yourself the truth. And I repeat this all the time to my kids. And going back to that idea that like our kids aren't creating the emotions in us, like you have to tell yourself the truth about your circumstances and your situation. And if you kind of feed yourself a negative narrative all the time about your circumstances, then that is what is going to like be permeating all of your thoughts and everything. And so sometimes it's just a matter of like choosing one statement of truth that can help you, like, you know what? I need to take a deep breath and recognize like children are a blessing from the Lord. Maybe have a quote of scripture or something, or you can pause and refocus on that and then move forward, I think is really helpful. A few years ago, I read a book called The Grumble-Free Year. It's been a while. I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
No, it sounds great, though.
It's a challenge book. Like, it was this family. I don't remember who wrote it. I'm going to have to look it up, and we'll link it for you in the show notes. But it's about this family, this mom. She's a mother of many, and she just recognized this attitude of complaining in her own heart. And they kind of made a pact as a family, and they were going to have just try for a year just not to complain about things. And then they had different ways that they were implementing this and like helping themselves to remind it. But we did not do the grumble-free year challenge in my home, but just reading the book very deeply impacted me about things. It made like brought to light things that I would really complain about. I'm from the deep south. I did not move to areas that got snow until I was older in life. And winter has been, we have a very tenuous relationship, winter and I. And the thing is that I found myself being very grumpy all winter. I would complain. I would wake up and see snow and it was immediately like just a grumpy attitude. Like it was just going to derail my whole day because I hated snow so much. And anybody that wanted to listen, I was going to tell them how much I hated winter. And one winter I was just like, this is one of the things I'm complaining about. There's no benefit to it. I'm not changing the weather. I'm certainly not making things happier in my home. So I just started like trying to appreciate things about winter and trying to notice things that, and just even in the days where I wasn't happy about it, but just not actively complaining about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, now several years later, like I joke sometimes, I'm like, okay, God is testing my patience with how long winter is lasting this year. But I have noticed a real like change in my own spirit, just like for an entire season, because I don't control the weather outside. Why would I let something like that from the outside control my emotions as much as they do, you know, and that's just it. I think it just goes back to that being able to like recognize the thing that is like, it's not causing the feelings in you, but it is definitely maybe something that is bringing those feelings to the surface. And so then you're like, okay, I can name this and then I can move forward, because just telling yourself the truth about a circumstance or a situation or a behavior is a great way to move forward in being cognitively aware to change it. I think you have to be aware of it before you can really make steps in changing it.
Oh, absolutely. And just being aware too that like you're like, I think we have to be careful with the word truth too, because your interpretation of the truth of what's happening right now is probably foggy based on the emotions that you're filtering them through. And so I think it just could be, you know, even just questioning, very gently questioning the statements that we say to ourselves, like, well, is that true? Like we say things like, I can't handle this. Like, well, is that true that I can't handle this? Is it always true? Is it 100% true all the time? Or, you know, is it true that I just don't want to handle this right now because I want it my way? I want them to be doing what I want right now. But, you know, I really love what you're saying about like the internal dialogue. And one thing that I found to be extremely powerful was the thought, I have really good kids, because I really struggled with like when I was saying earlier about the intentions, like I was not assuming the best in my kids. And just the statement, like, I actually have really good kids. And like, I love these kids, and I can build upon that because it gives me a positive charge in my body. It truly helps me root myself in the truth that, no, I actually do have really good kids, even when they're not behaving the way I'd prefer to. And then what I noticed was like, oh, I need to actually show up that way with them, not just within the day, but I need to show up and project that belief into the world, into my other relationships. And so going out and like texting my friends and complaining about kids, or talking, you know, standing around talking after mass, and, you know, the moms are kind of huddling around and like bonding over like the miseries of little kids and how hard it is and diapers and, you know, all the things, which is, you know, not because we all agree that, you know, it's horrible to be a mom. It was actually just like, we were just looking for ways to connect because this was such a hard season. I think we can kind of fall into that trap as well with as homeschoolers. But I noticed that I was no longer willing to complain about my kids, like as a way of bonding. I would rather bond over how awesome my kids are. And I can share about how challenging things are. But I didn't want to do that with a complaining heart. And I just noticed that when I was willing to go to bat for my kids, like sometimes even against myself, but like to other people, like really projecting like how true it is that they are just incredible kids, I started to build that belief and that narrative about my children. And I started being able to interact with my kids too in that same way. And that was a very important shift for us within the home, was noticing when I wasn't believing that about them, when I was not giving them the benefit of the doubt, not assuming the best in them. And that was being able to recognize and have that awareness, like you're saying, was an absolute essential step into becoming intentional. And that's the two things that I really teach moms and, you know, with life coaching is having how to have awareness of what's going on, what's actually within your control, because that can be very hard to understand. And then how to be intentional with moving forward.
That makes sense. When my second son was just, he was probably maybe 4 or 5. I had a mentor homeschool mom. We had joined a homeschool group, and it was mostly older moms with many kids. And I was definitely the youngest mom there and had the youngest kids by quite a big age gap. Mm-hmm. And they just welcomed me with such warm embrace. And I had one mom in particular who came alongside me and was just such a wonderful mentor, but she like almost chastised me one day after a homeschool meeting about speaking negatively about my child. Mm-hmm. And I was, well, first of all, I was like mildly offended at first because I really didn't have many people in my life that would talk to me that way, but it was such a blessing. Because it's just exactly what you were saying. Somebody to say, hey, you're kind of stuck here. And the more you repeat these things, that's what you're believing. And, you know, number one, you don't need to speak about your child that way, but you also need not to speak about them, especially where they can hear it, because then they are going to believe these things about themselves. And it was such a great experience for me as this really young mom who was just in the trenches. I had, you know, three kids that were very young, and I was so very tired and trying out this new homeschool thing and very overwhelmed. And to have somebody that loved me enough to say, hey, that's really not what you want for the future of your kids and for yourself. Like, you can do better. And it was really, like I said, it was very off-putting to me at first, because I really didn't have people in my life that would come alongside and be that direct. And I think that we can fall into that category. I talk to, like, my adult kids, especially my married kids. I'm like, you can surround yourself with people who will enable you to stay stuck in your negative thought patterns and validate all the awfulness that you're, like, you know, that you're sharing in common. Or you can surround yourself with people who will help you grow as a person and help you change your thought patterns and not dwell on all the negative things all the time. And I think there's a really important thing. And the same thing can be true whether we're talking about marriage or homeschooling or whatever. We can get stuck in those circles of people where we just begin complaining, and then that becomes the dynamic. Yeah. And I think it's really important to, as a homeschool mom, to surround yourself with other homeschool moms that are going to help lift you up out of that. And yes, that doesn't mean that you can't share your struggles and challenges. You know, I have those closest homeschool mom friends that I'm like, oh my goodness, like, we're dealing with this and it's very frustrating. And we really want to work together to help kind of problem solve and troubleshoot, because, oh, well, I've experienced that before. We tried this. Those things can be very helpful. But if all we do is kind of get into this complain fest about all the negative things, then we're not helping our thought patterns, and we're not actually helping our kids move out of that.
Yeah.
We're just getting kind of stuck there. So what are some simple things that we can do to kind of help interrupt thought patterns? That's what we've been talking about. We've been talking about how we get stuck in these thought patterns. So what are your ideas about ways that we can kind of interrupt these thought patterns when we find ourselves kind of going down this trail?
Yeah, I love that question. So I actually really recommend creating a pause and kind of just checking in with those thoughts throughout the day, instead of waiting until you're in the middle of a meltdown. Like, because it can be really, it's almost impossible, because your emotional brain is in charge. And when your emotions are higher, your intellectual brain is low. And so it's really hard to interrupt something without, like, an external factor or without practice. It's a muscle you have to build. And so I actually highly recommend practicing inserting just a very gentle pause throughout the day and just reflect, hey, like, what thoughts am I thinking for the last couple of hours? You know, is there something that I could shift right now to just feel a little bit better? And I'm not saying, like, one of the things we don't do is just sprinkle pixie dust and happy thoughts when things are truly painful, because we don't want to just gaslight ourselves and tell ourselves, oh, we shouldn't be experiencing pain right now. This is optional. Like, that's the wrong way to take this. Right. I don't want anyone to you know, leave today's podcast and say, well, Emily said I need to just think better thoughts and that will make my life better. Really and truly, what we can do is we can recognize this is probably, we might be having encountering like a painful circumstance. But what we tell ourselves about that is actually really important, because you can think, like, this is really hard and yet I can still, like, I can handle this, right? Or right. I'm the perfect mom for these kids. Sometimes that doesn't feel super tangible. But, you know, you could think, I have really good kids, or I could assume the best, or maybe I'm misunderstanding them. Like, maybe I don't have all the answers. But practicing just getting curious throughout the day about your own thoughts, and is there something maybe more neutral or even more positive, or how could you find gratitude for what you get to do versus what you think you have to do, can just help shift throughout the day. So maybe I talk about, like, it doesn't build up pressure inside of you like the Instant Pot. And you know, sometimes it just builds up throughout the day. And then if you're not being intentional about that, then that's kind of where we explode a little bit with like the manual release. But if you don't, if you're not actually releasing that in a healthy way, then it just seals back up and then the pressure builds back up. And then we, you know, continue through those cycles. And so I really believe that practicing gratitude throughout the day as much as possible, or at least, you know, maybe even ending the day with 3 to 5 things you can be really grateful for. Sometimes when I was really in the thick of practicing this one, is I would be grateful for the program button on my coffee maker because it was ready for me when I woke up in the morning, or I could just push the button and make it go. I didn't have to do the work to like make the coffee in the morning if I woke up really early with the baby. And so sometimes like just training your brain for gratitude, training your brain to look for the good, to assume the good can just help. It's kind of like memorizing scripture, you know, or listening to great music over and over that like lifts you up and raises your eyes higher. It just really, it's just there. It's just it's a muscle that you can build. It's ready when you need it. And so then when you notice that you're having, yeah, doing the actions you would prefer not to, or you have the urge to respond a certain way, then you can insert the pause and to kind of reflect or shift what you feel building up. You know, you can do that a little bit more readily. You can also ask for do-overs when you notice that you've messed up. We ask for do-overs all the time. We ask our children to do do-overs all the time. We can also, you know, ask for a minute to calm down. You know, just say, everybody needs to stop for a minute. I'm going to step away for a few minutes. I'm going to calm down. When I get back, we're going to talk about this. Like you can absolutely do that. And then you can also do this. Say that again.
No, that's something that I've learned to do is like, I'm feeling very frustrated right now. So I'm going to just take a minute and then we'll come back to this.
Yeah. And I love the way you just phrased that, because you're not saying I'm really frustrated because you're doing ... It's just, I'm feeling frustrated, period. Right? We're not blaming the kid for our emotions. And I think that that's important to be aware of our language. Like, I'm feeling frustrated. I'm going to step away for a minute. I love that.
Yeah. And then the other thing I've noticed, there are sometimes certain patterns in our homeschool day where, as you were talking about, kind of that instant pot pressure building, like I can feel my tension and fatigue rising. And it's really good for me to build in set breaks for myself. Like it doesn't have to be long. It's not necessarily like in escaping from the children, especially when you're in the thick of like all the babies and everything else, right? Yeah. You don't always have the space to be like, I'm just going to step away from the children. But there is a space in my day though, where like it's kind of between some of the lessons that I know are going to cause more frustration for kids that are struggling, right? And when they're frustrated, it is very easy for me to allow their frustration to become my frustration. Mm-hmm. And rather than responding in kind or ugly, you know, like in kind to their frustration or their outburst or whatever, like, and behaving in an ugly way, I've just learned to build in time slots. I'm like, okay, I know this subject for this child is particularly stressful right now. Like, we're just kind of going through a season where we're learning new skills. It's difficult. They're really working through some stuff. I need to be fresh and rested before I tackle that. But then also after it's done, I don't need to just roll in to doing like individual seat work with the next kid. Because by the time the third kid gets there and then I'm blowing up because they had a question about something, I'm actually not responding to their issue. It's just that building pressure over the course of like, okay, I've dealt with 3 people who have yelled at me because of math today. And now I'm frustrated. And instead of taking that moment to just be like, okay, I need to take a second and calm. I need to have a cup of tea. I need to step outside. It doesn't have to be long, and it doesn't have to be this big, you know, production of like getting away from the children. It just has to be a space where I can step away from what we're doing mentally, like in my head. I'm like, okay, we're just pivoting here for a few minutes to give myself a mental break so that I can come back more ready to tackle the next lesson with the next kid, so that I can come to them like more fresh or whatever.
Yeah. And one of the things I noticed is our kids need that too.
They
do. Our kids need a moment to just turn off. Like we want to be very efficient, right? We want to be very efficient in our day. And so we do kind of like, we don't give them a lot of margin in their day to be able to like deregulate from whatever. Cause it takes a lot of energy for them. Thinking takes a lot of energy. And so when you are doing that all day long and you're not getting a lot of downtime in between, or you feel like maybe you don't, especially as a child, like you might feel like you don't have enough time to do everything you need to do. Our kids have human brains too. They're going to have all the things, like all the thoughts you're thinking, they're probably thinking them to some degree too. And so really allowing them to have that time and space kind of in between subjects for transition and to get outside or move their body or get a snack or whatever they need to just shift away from that for a little bit, or offer a hug, you know, or like having like a moment of connection can just be so healing and so life-giving for mom and for kid. And it can really help us build trust and build relationship that really fuels everything else that we want to do in our homeschools.
Yeah. It's something I was not good about when my older kids were little and we were kind of in the thick of things. But with my younger kids, I have learned that. I'm like, hey, I can see that you're really frustrated. Why don't you just take a break? Like, just take a 5-minute break. Doesn't have to be long. Go to the restroom, grab a cup of water, step outside if it's beautiful, something, take a deep breath, and then come back to this. And I'll be right here when you're ready, and we'll move forward with your lesson. Because helping them learn those strategies for decompressing so that they're not escalating into something else is really important as well. And I think, like you said, we don't build a lot of margin into their days because our days are so full. Mm-hmm. And so then we get really kind of fixated on like, we have to do the next thing because we have so many things that we have to get through. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard to feel like it's okay to give our kids space for that because we're like, I don't have 5 minutes to give. I need to, like, I'm going to have to move on to the next thing. And I need them to cooperate now. Sometimes just rearranging the ordering and the scheduling of things to give people that space. Very recently in our homeschool, we had a conversation about how certain expectations were not being met. Like, I'm like, this is what we expect during this time and during school. And we had to kind of repeat this. And it's not new information to anybody, but mm-hmm. it needed to be repeated. And I usually give my kids kind of some input, and like they have an opportunity to kind of troubleshoot where their frustration and where their things are coming from. And we ended up changing the ordering of how we are doing school right now. So my daughter with dyslexia is now doing her lessons before we come to the table for morning time. And for a very long time, we have been starting our day with morning time. And then I would go into our individual lessons after that. And she would go first after morning time because I needed her to be fresher than kind of waiting to the end of the day. But just this simple switch, she asked for it. She was like, could I please do these things before morning time? And like, could we start earlier than everybody else does? And I was like, well, you know what? It's not super convenient for me, but I can arrange things so that we can make this happen. Because what she recognized, and she's 10, guys, and she was recognizing in herself is she, like I said, she's recently been diagnosed with dyslexia. She's reading is a real struggle for her. It's a hard task. Her reading lessons take a lot of energy. And she's spending her day, what I realized through this conversation, she wasn't able to articulate this, but she's dreading that reading lesson mm-hmm. until it happens. And so throughout the whole day, that pressure is building inside of her. And by moving her reading lesson to the first thing where she asked for it, and so she gets up and she has breakfast and she and I meet earlier than any of the other kids, and we tackle that hard thing with her. And then she's like, oh, now the rest of my day is easy. Mm-hmm. The amount of drama from this child overdoing school has decreased exponentially. Mm. And what I have found is that we're getting through with school a full hour earlier than we were before we made this switch. And it's not just because school takes less time or anything. It's just, I don't know, there's just a more like flow to the day. And it has to do with those, like noticing that energy level and that frustration and being able to give her the space to tackle something when she had more brain power to do it. I need that as a mom, but so many times I'm so like dictatorial about when they're going to do things or how, because I have so many more things to do than they do. And that is one of the things I have to talk to them about. I'm like, guys, I want to accommodate everybody's wishes and needs, but I actually have more on my plate to manage and juggle than you guys do individually. And some of the things you do individually depend on me. And so you have to be flexible and willing to see how that works within the whole. But if as a mom, I'm so focused on my own needs, then I forget to get their input. And then I'm making my own life harder because it's creating a situation for emotions to rise, frustrations to bubble over into unlovely behavior. So I think that has been a helpful thing in my house, is to every once in a while just to stop and evaluate. Like, again, back to the behavior is communication. Why are we having, you know, a very frustrating time every single day doing math or every single day doing the reading lesson? What is that communicating? How can I look for a space in our day and our structure and our schedule to help accommodate those needs? Because when their frustration levels go down, well, my frustration level definitely goes down.
Absolutely. No, and I love that. I love that you're taking the time to do that. I really would love it if everybody would do that, to just evaluate. You know, heck, you could do it once a month.
Right? It has to be repeated. Like,
it does, absolutely.
Yeah. And being willing to kind of try something out for a little bit, to stick with it long enough where you kind of get a feel for whether it's working or not, and then evaluate those pain points and kind of seeing. But I think, like, just as homeschool moms, all of these things are tied together. Like, that might have seemed like kind of a tangent, but truthfully, we have so many things to juggle and manage, and it's really difficult to pull everything together where we feel like we're being productive, our children are being educated and loved, and we're building relationships with all of them. And just the emotional pieces from our children and from us and those thought patterns, they all tie together in this like big picture of life. So, well, I have absolutely enjoyed this conversation. I want to leave our listeners with just some real practical application of how maybe we have a mom listening and she's like, oh my gosh, they're speaking to me. I've really, my attitudes are not great. And I know that I need to change, but I really don't know where to begin. So what do we tell that mom? If there's a mom that's listening and thinking, I'm stuck in this negative thinking, I don't know how to change, what would you say directly to her? And then maybe share with us one shift that she could make tomorrow, like, or today, like, you know, when she's listening to this, something that she can have to take action with as she, you know, leaves this episode.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mama, if you're listening, just know I've been there and I am still there sometimes. And that it's okay to pause. It's okay to breathe. You are whole and complete regardless of what you or your kids have done or do right now. Nothing and no one can diminish your worth or your value as a beloved daughter of God. Your children are beloved children of God, regardless of what you've done in the past, regardless of how you showed up 5 minutes ago, regardless of how you even responded to an interruption from a kid during this podcast episode while you were listening. You have nothing to prove. You and your kids are going to be okay. Their future is not all riding on this moment or this week or even, you know, like this month, this school year will not, you know, completely determine their future. So it's going to be okay. Your only job is to love them the best that you can, and you don't need to be their savior. They already have one, and I promise it's not you. So
it's such a business there.
Yeah, and for my kids, I say this to myself all the time, like, they already have a savior and it's not Emily. It's not Emily Brown. So things you can do right now is you can look for the things that you're grateful for. Like, truly, gratitude is the gateway to hope. This is what I deeply believe. And if you are stuck in that negative thought patterns, you probably feel a little bit hopeless, a little bit helpless, powerless in the situation to change things. And really and truly, the only thing you really honestly need to change is you. And they, by changing you, then you are influencing your children because you are changing one of their primary circumstances that they engage with on a regular basis. And so it is not only good work that to do this, but to it is important work for moms to do this as well. So looking for the good, assuming the best, you can change the story from this like life or parenting or homeschooling being just inherently painful to being a story of neutrality at the very least. Like, yeah, we are doing math today versus like, oh, I have to do math again today. Right. It's a very different story, exact same circumstance. So like really, you can really decide what it is that you want to tell yourself. But in regards to just like what's one thing that you could do is super practical. And if there's going to be a mom out there who's like, but what do I do when my kid is talking back? Like, what is the thing I can do when they are being disrespectful or rude or like, what do I do then? And so here's what I want. This is the thing I want to give you is you can very like recognize that they are a good human, that you love them. Recognize you have your own emotions and take a deep breath. Okay. And then here's what you can say to them. You can borrow this script if you want to, but it's a calm, respectful way you just say to your child, in case you were unaware, the way you're talking to me is sounding very disrespectful or rude or whatever your word is. If that's not how you are intending it, then I would like for you to please try again and say it the way you would like for me to hear it.
I love this.
If you are willing to do that, you are assuming the best intentions in your kids. They're going to see that. They're going to feel it. They are going to know you're on their team. And they are going to, that helps to build trust with them. And we can build trust from this calm and respectful place. Then that's where the relationship, the foundation of that relationship can start being laid. We can start laying those bricks regardless of what it's been in the past. Even if your oldest, you know, your youngest kid is 15, 16, 17 years old, like you can do this work, I promise. And you can have the relationship with them that you want, because if we're prioritizing the relationships over the tasks of the day, believe it or not, the tasks actually get done. The most important things get done every single day when we're willing to connect with our kids and love them with that unconditional love, meaning they don't have to behave a certain way for you to love them. And I know each of us would say that that is true. Now we just need to put our money where our mouth is. And so this one phrase that you can take and just do it in your home as much as you need to, I think it can be the gateway to being able to do that. And then also asking for the do-over, right? This is something you can do for yourself too, is saying, hey, you know what? I do this too. I catch myself like getting really worked up and like, oh, everybody needs to stop, right? And the noise in the house, or you know, nobody's listening or whatever it is. And I might catch myself, you know, being, you know, unkind or rude or impatient. And I will actually just interrupt myself and I'll say, you know what? That's actually not what I meant. I was not assuming the best in you all. Here's what I really mean. And I will demonstrate and model that for them. So either or both would be the thing that I would want a mom who is struggling in those negative thought patterns to just know that this is something you can do like immediately. If you notice that you're just stuck there, it is something that you can actively change. And believe it or not, the more you're willing to practice those things, those actions, then your brain's going to start to notice, oh, I'm going to have to do that over again if I do it the way I don't want to. Maybe it would just be better to do it the way I'd prefer to first. And it's going to start interrupting you, like your brain will start interrupting you on its own. So just know that this is a skill. It takes time. It's a muscle to build, but you can start it. Yes, lots of repetition. Exactly. And to just be patient, to really and truly be patient with you and your children, because this is a skill that you're all going to be learning. But this is a skill that these are the skills that are going to shift everything and are going to set them up to be able to engage with life, the world, the work God has in store for them from here on out. And again, it just helps you kind of get out of the way and allow them to build that relationship with you and the Lord. Like it helps them to be more open to His word as well if they feel nice and secure with mom at home. And we have the privilege of being able to do that in our homeschools as part of what we do, what we're being called to do.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate this conversation so much. I'm definitely going to be using the, hey, that sounded disrespectful,
but that's you were unaware.
We're trying to communicate. I like that. In case you were unaware. Yeah, I think sometimes they respond in ways just like we do. They don't. And I love the idea, too, of just really thinking the best and assuming that our kids' intentions aren't negative all the time, I think is a great place to begin. But yes, prioritizing those relationships is one of the main things we're about here at Homeschool Better Together. So yeah, really appreciate your input today, Emily, and thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Lainey. I've been thrilled to be here.
Please share with our listeners where they can find you.
You can find me at fiatlifecoaching.com, which is F-I-A-T lifecoaching.com.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Emily.
Thank you, Lainey.
That's our show for today. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review so you never miss out on the wonder of homeschooling better together. To stay connected and learn even more about the Homeschooling Better Together resources, and to join our free community, visit hsbtpodcast.com. Until next week, keep stepping out of the overwhelm and into the wonder.